Dude, you said you had leather costumes.
The pads are leather. The leather light.
Where did you get these things? Why is there a bowl on my helmet?
Yeah, it was a family double dare. Totally swiped them.
Well, that makes me feel better about all the stains.
Oh, yeah. That's gack. You know, physical challenge. All right, let's do this. Ready?
Thank God. A guy can only wear a jetpack for so long without using it. Dude, my shoe's on fire. I just lit my shoes on fire.
Let's do this. So, hi. Welcome to Venture Bros, Venture Brothers Podcast. With me, as always, Brian Dressel. With me, as always, Graham Tate Mason.
Hello. That's accurate.
I know, right? I was going accurate this time, and then I just realized I don't know Nick's middle name. So, Nick, I don't know his middle name, Friedemann.
Does he even have a middle name?
It's Carl.
Is it?
Yeah. C-A-R-L, the most boring name of all time.
It's not a boring name. It immediately makes me think of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, which is somewhat relevant to not today's episode. Or today's episode, right? Today's episode, not next week's?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. So it is somewhat relevant.
We're on top of our stuff. We know what we're doing.
We are recording like 2 hours earlier than we usually do, so maybe we're all just tired.
Indeed.
I've been up for 3 hours already, Brian.
I've been up for two, so I really have no excuses.
Coffee's still kicking in. That's the
Yeah. I just made my coffee. That's it.
Wait, what? It's the first thing you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I know. What can you do? Make it earlier. I get it. Anyhow, let's talk Venture Brothers. So this week we are talking, Fallen Arches, right?
Yes.
That is the correct title?
Yes.
Fallen Arches.
Nick, you've been gone for 2 weeks. Do you want to tell everybody what happens in this episode?
Yeah, sure. So the seeds of this episode were planted last season when Dr. Orpheus wants to be arched like Dr. Venture. He mentions it a few times and basically gets a videotape in the mail that says that basically they're planning on arching him, and the auditions essentially are today. That is the date provided. So if he had gotten it a day later, it would still be correct. Then he goes through all the processes, and Dr. Venture's nice enough to allow them to start this on the lawn. And it's basically a bunch of villains coming in to audition for the role of being the arch of Dr. Orpheus and the crew that he assembled, which includes a Blackula hunter and the alchemist. And Dean and Hank have to entertain Triana, and she ends up getting captured by who ends up being the arch, which is, I've blanked on his name. Somebody
Torrid.
Help me. Torrid.
Torrid.
Who's taken her to the Torrid zone, and that ends up being basically the whole episode.
You skipped over what I would say is the strongest thing in the episode, which I don't even want to give it the credit of calling it a B story, because it's barely even a story.
Yes.
But you skipped over the walking eye, which is clearly the heart of this episode.
Yeah, you could say that. It's a pretty half-baked idea that they're pretty aware of.
I think that's why it works so well, but
I kind of agree. When he's like asking them for suggestions of what they see, like it's like some sort of ink blot test that they're like, what do you see when you look at this? And they're just throwing ideas out there, and he's like, these are all great. And you're like, oh, you're the worst.
I like that he still included monkey welding.
Yes, monkey proof welding.
Yeah, monkey proof welding.
Like, God.
When even that's getting taken, like, you know you're just out of ideas.
He has nothing. I'm always, like, it always fits his character to me, but I'm always, like, personally offended when he creates these things and then he doesn't know what to do with them or how to sell them. And he's looking for, like, new features to add, but you're just like, well, what was your motivation in the first place? Were you just like genuinely throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, and then you came up with this and you're like, I guess this works?
No, with this one, no.
Yeah,
he wanted to make a walking eye. Like, that's what he wanted to do. He didn't give a shit what it did. He wanted to make a walking eye.
That's fair.
And it's proved By later, he turns Helper into a walking eye. Like, he just wants to make walking eyes.
That's true. I do love the Helper version of the walking eye.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we'll get there when we get to that, because it's just amazing. It's Helper! You love him!
I also forgot the Monarch B story, which I would also argue is also barely a B story, but still, I love it. Which
oh, it's
is
so
he.
Good.
He hires a what is assumed to be, I'm assuming it is a prostitute, to pretend to be Dr. Girlfriend, and then she is forced to escape, which I find really dark.
darker
than usual for this show, and arguably darker than usual for the Monarch, but I guess it's to show like how far he's fallen without, you know, his stability of being in this, like, what was a loving relationship that he has ruined.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a prostitute. I mean, by the end of the episode, 21 to 24, just calling her a whore.
That's true. Oh, God. This episode is a lot of weird shit in it.
There's so much... Like, this is just an odd episode. And, like, when it comes down to it, if we're to do hot takes around the table, I would say I really enjoy it. I don't think it's, like, super high up there on the list for me. I'd probably be middle of the pack for season two. But I think it's a good episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like this episode. It's weird and it doesn't really fit well, I don't know. But yeah, it's an entertaining episode throughout with all of its weird and quirks and things.
It does kind of feel like it has a bit of like a grab bag aspect to it of like, all right, we have a lot of really good ideas, but not a lot that we can stretch into a whole episode either than this Orpheus thing. So let's just kind of like just throw it all out there and just kind of get it done with.
For sure. Well, have you ever heard of, have I brought this up of like the third principle of TV on this podcast?
No.
So there used to be for like sitcoms when they had to do something absurd, like 30 to 40 episodes a season. Basically, the writers were like, we're only going to be able to do a third, which are really good, a third, which are okay, and a third are going to be terrible. And for me, like, this season doesn't really fall into that because I don't think it falls into third. But I do think that, like, there are pieces of episodes this season where you're like, huh, like, this doesn't quite fit what the show ends up becoming or really even what the show was in the first season. Like, I would argue that the prostitute storyline is kind of too dark for this, but it still kind of works.
I think it's pretty dark, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's fitting for him. And I mean, he's in a dark space now anyways, but yeah.
Yeah.
I agree it's dark, but I think since they didn't kill her and she got a free mostly powder blue stanza out of the deal, it's not as dark as it could be.
That is true, I guess. It's like at the end of I never remember the name of the Star Wars movie, so I'll just say episode 6 when they blow up the second Death Star. Spoilers. And
wow,
you're
Return
like,
of
yeah,
the
this
Jedi.
Is great.
Come on.
Return of the Jedi. I do not remember any of
them.
He
even has the poster behind him.
Yeah, it's like right there.
Yeah, but it's all like in the background and stuff. But like,
I mean, all that
when they blow up the Death Star and you're just like, oh, I guess this is the end of it, but you're like, wait, that's just one ship in this vast empire that they've established. This is nothing. Like, it's a drop in the bucket.
I mean, it is a big ship, but yes, yeah, there's plenty.
I mean, it's certainly no moon.
No. What was the budget for that, you think?
For the Death Star?
Budget?
Yeah.
I think it's build it or die, I think, is the budget for that.
Nah. That doesn't really fit well on an accounting spreadsheet, but...
Yeah. I mean, when you're right, you're right. Let's move back into Venture Brothers before that very weird dark hole of how much did it cost to build the Death Star comes back. I think that, honestly, the weakest thing that I find in this episode is... As much as I love the Order of the Triad, I think the tryouts for their villain is the weakest storyline in this grab bag of storylines episode.
Oh, really?
I'd have to actually disagree, because I think, I mean, yeah, some of them kind of fall flat, and it does kind of, like, detract from the rest of the stuff, but, like, once, like, them getting together is amazing. And then when they actually get Torrid, that's wonderful. And the other guy, like, can we use magic guy? That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I like him so much better than Torrid. I think the major problem with it is I just don't like Torrid. Like, I've never liked Torrid.
Yeah, I find him confusing.
Yeah.
He's very serious.
Yeah.
Kind of. He's very serious, who also hides in the shower from Hank and Dean.
Yeah.
Who should not be afraid of at all.
Yeah. It's weird because I think with almost all the other villains or almost all the other, honestly, with all the other characters, like, especially, so we get to see Sergeant Hatred for a little bit in this episode, and then we actually...
Half a beat, yeah.
Yeah, for half a beat. Yeah. And then for, like, obviously he comes back later this season, but he has such, like, a round, full character. While with Torrid, I'm not really even sure what his motivation is. Like, with the Monarch, he just hates Dr. Venture. And I think that, like, the absurdity of hating somebody that much is what carries most of his character through until you get to know him better. But with Torrid, it's such, like, a thin, weird brush that they're using to paint this character with. I'm not really sure what he wants or what he's... I don't know. I just don't really know much about him, and so I don't really care much about him.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like one of those, oh, here's kind of a cool idea for a character. Anything we can do with him? Not really. Oh, okay. Well, I guess we'll use him when we can. Because he only comes back like two or three times, I want to say. And
yeah.
I just never particularly like enthralled by him. And it's like, it could just be that he's our first example of like the arching's just a job, I do it for a living sort of thing. And his heart's not really in it. But they don't really explore that either. So...
Right, and he is supposed to be, I guess, like a B-lister at best, just like the Order of the Triad is, but I don't know.
I mean, I think it's definitely this is just a job, and I'm going to do the best at my job that I can, and I think he's certainly better than a lot of the guys that try out that day. But yeah, it's like, he doesn't really have any heart behind it, he's just pretty good at doing what he does with his fire and brimstone.
Yeah, but I think that's why I ultimately just don't find anything enjoyable about that storyline. Because everybody in this show, at least for the most part, loves what they do or hates it so much that it's entertaining. To have somebody kind of in the middle of the road, it's just not particularly engaging. Like, especially with everything else in the show being so engaging and so awesome, to have somebody just kind of like, meh, it just kind of gives a meh feeling to everything he's involved in. So as awesome as the Order of the Triad is, and we'll get into them, I feel it does them a disservice for this is the first time we get to meet them and see how awesome they are. And they are like one of my favorite things in the entire show. And here's their arch nemesis who is nowhere near as equally awesome and kind of forgettable and boring. And it just, I think that's why I think their storyline's the weakest, because they just didn't give them what they deserved.
Yeah, well, he does come back, and when he does come back, he's pretty powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
But still
defeated easily.
Yeah. I also have this weird thing, too, where it's like, it's a common trope that in a lot of superhero movies or a lot of things kind of within this realm, like not quite the Venture Brothers, but like a group of some kind will do some sort of audition to make the group bigger. Like they did one in Deadpool 2. They did one in, you know, Mystery Men, to call back to like a much older terrible movie. And I often find
saw it.
Yeah, that is true. I guess we have all seen it. But there's something weird to me about it, because they're trying to show that like all these people are kind of failures, but then because they're failures, it's kind of like, why am I watching this? Like, it feels kind of like a weird antithetical sort of experience, which I think is what Brian's hitting on, which is, they're all kind of bad villains, so why are we watching them be bad? Especially in a show where it's like, you're either really good at your job, like you're Brock Samson, or you're really bad at your job and you hate it, but you keep doing it because it's really all you know, and like Doc Venture. And to have a bunch of people who are kind of in the middle and floundering isn't necessarily the best.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say, put way better.
No. Yeah! Yeah! Way to go.
Yeah, what he said.
Oh, nailed it. Yeah, I mean, but I also think it's like kind of such is life, like art mimics life, where you have people who are, you know, just kind of doing their daily thing, and then you've got people who are just doing their daily thing and just happen to be really good at it, but they have no heart in it, and they're just like, yeah, this is my job, and I'm fucking badass at it, but whatever.
Yeah. And then, I get what you're saying, but it still just kind of has, like, the, as true to life as that can be, like, why... I mean, I don't need to harp on this the entire episode. Like, it's
no,
fine.
I get what you're saying, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a reason for it, but I understand that by that lackluster behind it, it's not as entertaining as it could be.
Right. And I think the major bumping thing, and this is where we can move into them, is because the Order of the Triad is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they are... When they eventually leave the show, it's depressing. Like, they didn't, like, fully, like, have, like, a big thing to leave the show, but they're just not in it for a while. And it's like, where the hell are they? Like, they're, like, my favorite thing.
Yeah. They're really great. Because to me, they represent a sliver of the universe that is really interesting because they're not A-listers in this world. They're kind of like along for the ride. They happen to know Doc Venture, which is why they're probably in the show. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of their thing. But they're also fascinating because they're all actually pretty good at their job. I just think that they don't really want to seek out the actual fame part of it. This is more of like a club fun thing for them.
Yeah, it feels like a while back they were into it for the fame and whatnot. And that's when they like reached out to the guild and wanted to be part of the guild. And then they were not denied, but they weren't accepted, so they just kind of went their own separate ways, and now they're finally approved, and it's like, oh, I guess we were kind of into that whole hero thing.
Yeah.
Let's do it, I guess. It's like,
let's get the band back together.
Yeah. And I love just checking in with them and their current lives. Like, Jefferson Twilight might be one of my favorite characters. Like, he might be in the top five characters in this show for me.
Yeah.
He's great.
Pretty incredible. So damn funny. Like, the way we meet him is so good. Like, I'm gonna take these fangs. It's gonna hurt.
Like, a lot.
It's gonna hurt a lot. Like, a lot. I need him for my necklace.
And he also has, like, some of my favorite, like, random quotes that, like, stick... You know, we talked about this a lot early on when we started doing the show of, like, quotes that stick with us, but there's no context that, like, I can give, and this is not a quote from this episode, but I think about this all the time where he's like, you're giving me blue balls in my blood eye, and which is established much later, but it's like, I can't bring that up. What is that? What area can I slide that in?
I've actually been I've been doing one of his quotes from season 7 a lot lately, where it's it comes out of nowhere a lot of times, where I just say it wasn't magic, but it's from the when they're supposed to paint a circle on the floor in the like in the thing, like the entryway,
yes,
whatever you want to call
the
it,
lobby
is the word I'm looking for. Good lord! But yeah, the big circle in the lobby. There already was a circle here. It wasn't magic.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I like all of his failed one-liners.
Yes.
He just has to keep reattempting. You're like, I'm gonna...
I think he's like... he's a character that they don't really ever dive too much into the history of. Like, every now and then they give like a little bit of a glimpse. But you can just... like, he feels just like a fully rounded character who he just kind of... like, he has his own life. He does his own thing. And then every now and then he hangs out with adventure people. But for the most time, he's out killing Blackulas.
Exactly.
I do like his line in this. You're like, I don't know what the PC term for hunting Black Draculas is, so I just call him Blackulas.
Oh, that's so good.
African-American Dracula. No, because I work in Britain, too, and they don't have African-Americans. So I just call him Blackulas.
It's so good.
He's
And then we have the alchemist, who becomes way bigger of a character. Like,
yes,
like way bigger than Jefferson Twilight, which is a shame because I love Jefferson Twilight. But like,
yeah, but I love the alchemist too. And I think it's a season 4 when he has that episode with Hank, the detective episode with Hank. Fucking incredible!
Oh yeah, it's such a great episode.
Yeah,
but it's Dana Snyder who voices him, and it's I'm not sure if you guys remember this. It's actually, I was looking for it in the book, and they don't mention it in the book. but it was a story like back when they hired him, and it just it killed me. Of apparently Jackson Publick and Doc Hammer were like in the recording booth with him, trying to get him to do different voices. Like, why don't you try it like this? Try it like this. Just trying to really nail that alchemist voice down. They couldn't figure it out, and apparently about halfway through, like, just do Master Shake. Just do Master Shake. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, oh, it works.
It does. Like, what? Because he's such like a goofy. He's such like a goofy character. Like, he obviously is sincere, and he obviously cares about what he is, like, and what he does. You know, which they he does less and less and less because I think he's bored of it.
Yeah.
But he is a goofy guy. Like, that's his personality. Like, he is just kind of much more lighthearted than he lets on, which I think is important to have a voice that kind of matches that. And Master Shake / The Alchemist is a lighthearted voice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the writing for him is entirely different. I mean, the, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's kind of like.
It fits very well.
It's like H. John Benjamin. Like, it's the same voice in almost every role he's in, but the characters are all distinctly different. And I think it's kind of the same with Dana Snyder on this one, where it's like, yeah, the voices might be the same, but the characters could not be more different.
That's true.
I think it was funny. H. John Benjamin was on NPR for a little... don't tell me for a second. He's like, can you tell us the difference between your two main voices? I think it was Bob's Burgers and Archer. And... he didn't change anything about his voice, but he just added some extra words in one of the... it's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, exactly. There's no difference between your voice or how you're actually doing it. You're just... it's more about the writing than anything else. And I think, you know, to further prove the point, as far as this versus Alchemist and Master Shake, it's more about the writing and the actual character and the words that are used as opposed to what the actual voice is. Because actually, right now, I didn't even really compare the two voices... until just now.
Right.
And it's like, oh shit, that is the same voice. But the characters are two entirely different characters. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just very, very different. But they still just work. Like, they're still just...
mm-hmm.
They're both funny in their own ways. Like, I don't really go back to Aqua Teen that much. Every now and then I'll flip on an episode, but I didn't have the obsession with that one that I obviously do with Venture Brothers. But it was enough to where, even, like, when it came on, I'm like, oh, I know that voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because I think at the time, Aqua Teen Hunger Force was, like, the big show on Cartoon Network. Or specifically Adult Swim. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, and it's like, these shows would have been within, like, an hour and a half of each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, probably.
When they aired.
Yeah, I mean,
this, and then Poverty Birdman, and maybe Squidbillies, and then...
But didn't Venture Brothers always play later? Like, I know now it's on at midnight. Like, I thought it was always kind of with the later show. So Aqua Teen would have played, like, a couple hours before it, probably. But they might be on, like, the same night, or...
It probably played, like, 15 times before the Venture Brothers.
Yeah.
It was, like, impossible to not watch Adult Swim and not see an ad for Aqua Teen Hunger Force, like, 15,000 times.
Oh, yeah. And since the episode's only 15 minutes long, the ad is basically an episode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think we haven't really hit on in this thing is we haven't really talked about 21 and 24's C, D, E story, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Extras.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of like what I was saying earlier with the whole, like, grab bag of, we have ideas that really won't go anywhere. This is my number one thing that pops up every now and then throughout the early seasons of Venture Brothers that I'm so glad they got rid of. Which is 21 thinking he can be a villain.
Yes.
Every time it comes up, I'm like, you're not a villain. Like, it's just not who you are. It eventually kind of goes on, like, a finding himself thing and figures that out, which is great, but...
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's a necessary evil. I think it's got to be there. I think he's got to question it. Because, you know, when he goes on his, you know, quest and Henchman 1 and all that stuff, it's like... oh, holy shit, he could actually potentially be his own thing.
Yeah.
And then when he actually confronts it, he's like, no, I'm just a really good henchman.
Yeah.
I think it's a necessary journey for him entirely.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not a necessary journey. I feel like it felt almost like internally they couldn't figure out whether or not they wanted him to be his own thing. So they just kind of flirt with it every now and then. It's more of a problem in, like, specifically season four, I want to say, where it's really just like Gary doesn't know what the hell he is, and they actually use that really well in season four.
Yeah, I think it works really well. I don't think as a downside at all.
No. I think it works really well later. I think the early on stuff is where it's like, this is just trying to find fun stuff for 21 and 24 to do, which is great. Watching him go out and fuck around with jetpacks is hilarious, but it's not like, you don't really actually think that 21's going to go out and become a villain. Like, that's just not a thing.
No.
Till later is that actually like, oh, I guess he might be able to pull this off.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually one of those things of, like, where he goes out, and how, as we were saying about Torrid and all these other guys, and, I mean, the whole series of everybody is doing the best that they can, but ultimately failing. I think this is one of his moments of, like, oh, actually, I see all these other people who are just doing the same thing that I'm doing, so maybe I can be a villain, too. And then when he actually tries it out, he's like, oh,
it's just not for him. Like, and that even comes up again in season seven. If you're not caught up yet, I won't go too deep into it because it's late in the season. But it comes up again, and it's handled, I'd say, probably the best that it has been so far in season seven. You guys should really watch season seven. It's fucking amazing.
I'm getting there.
I had to stop right before the move, so I'm gonna catch up probably in a bit.
Well, we are in a post Venture Brothers world again. So sad.
Sad.
Start over.
I've already done it so many times. I don't need to anymore. I've watched the entirety of season 7 3 times already. So,
oh god.
it's some good shit. Specifically the first 3 episodes. We'll get there. I'm trying to think of what else we haven't hit in this thing that I feel like we need to.
I think we've hit everything. I mean, we can talk about Lady Windermere, but I think that that's pretty self-explanatory.
So. Yeah, that's amazing, but again, kind of, eh.
I do love Brock's line. It's just like, Dr. Venture's like, I was trying to tell him about the birds and the bees. Yeah, well, how did that work out for you? He's doing a scene from Lady Windermere. Yeah, well, that's kind of as what you could expect.
Amazing.
I feel so bad for Triana throughout the majority of this show. Like,
yeah.
But
like,
I think
she just wants to have fun. I mean, she does go out and do her own thing. Like, she's just not tied to the compound, which is great. But it's like,
yeah,
clearly she kind of enjoys Dean, and just Dean's never going to be on her level. And it kind of feels like if he was, they might actually be friends. But he's just such a dork.
Well, he's also had, like, a pretty horrific childhood and upbringing.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, like, he has no social skills. You know, Hank kind of has social skills where he can fake
it. Hank has just blind stupidity that it just comes across as charming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Dean's got Lady Windermere, and that's it.
He's got book smarts, and that's how he thinks it is to people.
He has learning bed smarts.
Bed smarts.
Yeah. I think other than that, I think we pretty much hit everything in this. I mean, there's, I would say, arguably some of like the most obscure and random pop culture references. So
I know
for our references, I'm gonna have more than one. I think this time because there's so many.
Yeah, I wrote down a few.
Do you want to move into those really quick?
Yes.
Let's finish this thing. So I'll save my best one for last. Let's just go. Oh, actually, no, I lied. There's one thing that I do need to mention this because it does come up in season 7, and I love that they planted the seeds for it this early. They mentioned the Peril Partnership, and I don't know if you guys are far enough in season 7 yet, but Peril Partnership pops up here and there throughout the series and becomes a major thing in season 7, and I love seeing those little things here and there throughout. It's always fun.
I think it pops up in season 4 or season 5 as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's never the...
Just as a mention. It just a mention.
Yeah. It's kind of like Sergeant Hatred pops up here and there, major character. Peril Partnership kind of had the same thing of, like, if you're paying attention or looking out for it, you'll see it mentioned here and there, and then a major thing in season 7. As soon as I saw that when they're talking about the other costume villainy groups, I'm like, oh, I wonder if Peril Partnership's there, and I had to pause it on the screen. I'm like, yep, there it is.
Huh.
God, these guys are smart. It's almost like they made one of my favorite shows.
Yeah. It is really impressive. And we've said it before and we'll continue to say it.
Yep.
It's like their attention to detail and of just stuff that seemingly means nothing at all.
and it's just a one-liner, and you're like, oh, that's kind of funny. You're like, oh, okay, a little peril partnership. All right, it's just another thing of alliteration. That's kind of fun. But they just keep it up, and they keep it consistent, and they pull it all the way through, and they pull out this tiny thread into something much bigger, and the payoff is incredible, and I love it time.
It's, I mean, that's why I think we all love it so much. It rewards rewatching more than almost anything else I can think of.
Yeah.
But we've said that before, and again, and again, and again. Probably we'll say it again, just so you know.
Probably next episode.
Not next one.
No, not next
one. You sure?
Maybe the week after next.
Maybe. Maybe next episode, but I don't think so.
I don't think so. Let's move into pop culture references. We'll just kind of go until we're out of them. I got to start with my favorite one that comes right out of the gate. When Dr. Orpheus is watching the video with Watch and Ward, who finally get their names in this episode. And at the end, he's like, "Pumpkin, who sent this? Why, if it's from Netflix, I put Splash on your queue." Oh, Splash. Splash? Why would you? It's like, you can tell he's like, why would you want to see Splash again?
Yes. Like, she had just rented it and was like, yeah, I can watch it again.
And just the very understandable question of why would you want to see Splash again?
It's true. It's inexplicable.
All right, that was my one. Next?
Do you want to go, Graham?
Sure. So this is one of those moments of that we talked about for a minute of when the monarch is torturing the prostitute. And she's running down the hallway of like, oh, and now which door? Is it this door? There could be a year's supply of turtle wax behind that one. Or the polar bear from Lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was far and away my favorite one in the whole episode. It's so good.
Yeah, and it was so relevant at that time. I remember, holy shit, this was so many years ago. So.
Yeah, I mean, this would have been what, 2006?
Yeah.
Lost was going on fucking strong in 2006.
Yes, it was.
And I just love that, too. It's like, it's still funny now, but like when you think about like how culturally accurate and like aware this show was, it's amazing.
Yeah. I actually think it's funnier now in, like, retrospect without thinking about Lost being popular anymore. Like, the polar bear from Lost. Why Lost?
Yeah.
That's kind of true. Yeah.
Very true.
Nick, what about you?
Well, in the same storyline, when the monarch takes off his clothes and he has the giant minotaur tattoo, which is a reference to Red Dragon, which I didn't know at the time, and I was watching this episode going, what the fuck is happening? Like, it's one of those moments where, like, either they're referencing something or this is insane. And then I saw Red Dragon later and was like, oh, the monarch speech. Like, I was like, it took me out of that movie entirely.
I like that it worked retroactively for you. That's amazing.
Of course, because it stuck with me because I was, like, sitting in my apartment at the time watching this episode going, like, This is insane. Like, this is so weird. And out of left field.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. The other one that I'll have to mention then, because Graham did cover the bases on my other favorite one, so I'll just have to bring this one up. Aquaman does not get a lot of love these days, even with his movie coming out. So the fact that they have an argument about Aquaman, so good. And it's like that perfect Venture Brothers argument of, like, the... Aquaman, I don't even know what he does. He fights Black Manta. It's like, why would Dr. Orpheus have any idea who fucking Aquaman's arch nemesis is?
Yeah. Can I add one more?
Mm-hmm.
The washing of the walking eye is a reference to Cool Hand Luke.
Oh, so good.
With I just love Rusty Venture pressing his movies up against the walking eye that they show. That was it for me. I was like, this is so stupid.
Even with the music, the da 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 da.
Exactly. I just wish that they had thrown in a line, which is my favorite line in Cool Hand Luke, which is, she knows exactly what she's doing.
I think the only thing we missed in this episode that I'll just throw a quick shout out to is the Lady Au Pair and her Muppets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I do love seeing the Muppets. They are the worst characters ever, and I love them so much. Yep.
I love how at this point she's kind of fed up with them too. It's like as she's walking off, she's like, "Does anybody want a Muppet?"
It's great.
Oh, the Muppets. All right, well, let's move into plugs, and then we'll be done with this one, and we'll move on to next week. So for plugs for me, so be sure to check out After the Hype. We have the end of our horror month this Thursday, which will be, or it might have been last Thursday. My God, calendars, man. They're the worst.
See, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, you're right. They are the worst. let's see, no, this episode comes out on the 22nd. Nope, so it is. Thursday will be the last of our horror month. And that is a Secret Santa episode, or what we're calling Secret Pumpkin for this one, and it should be a lot of fun. We've all been randomly assigned horror movies, and we have Nicholas Friedman joining us, and that should be a lot of fun.
Who?
Woo!
Are you excited to go Carl. Back to After the Hype?
Yeah, why not?
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah, you only... Yeah. Only helped start the podcast, and you're like, "Eh, whatever. I guess I'll go hang out with them again."
Yeah, it was
so
fun.
Long ago.
That was like 5 years ago. It was a long time.
That's true.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how long has it been since you've been on, Nick?
Yeah, probably about 5 years. Because I lived in Hoboken for like two and a half, and yeah. Same with Quebec. So yeah, it's been close to 5 years.
Yeah,
for sure.
Been a long time.
Yep.
So that's it for my plugs. Oh, and check out Samwise, an amazing new show, also in the After the Hype feed. So if you're listening After the Hype, just be sure to keep listening and go to Samwise, which is amazing. Graham, Nick, anything to plug?
It was just my birthday, so there's that.
That's not a plug.
I'm older than I've ever been, and now I'm even older.
And you're a fan of They Might Be Giants.
And that's Nick, it. That's all I got.
Nick, you plug in anything?
Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It's a great game. Go out and buy it. That's about it.
The reviews are through the roof.
I'm thrilled.
Good job,
like,
Nick.
Thank you.
Everything's great except for the sound. The sound
I don't care
sucks.
About the sound. Sound doesn't matter to me. It's the voice. That's all that matters. That was my job.
Ooh.
Sorry.
Damn. Even a subset. All right.
Yeah. No, I picked a niche field and was like, you know what? How can I make this more difficult for myself? I'll go into a subset, a microcosm of this field. That will be my job.
That sounds like job security.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, there you go. There you go.
All right, so we should say bye.
Bye.